We're talking with Mike DeMonte about Punk Rock and UFOs, True Believers, a book that sort of explores UFO beliefs, perceptions, rivalries, turf wars, media environment. Much more to come here, and we'll open up the phone lines in just a couple of minutes. Stick around for more Coast to Coast AM. So, Mike, after studying this for a few years now, do you think ufology would qualify as a religion for some people, at least?
No. I think a lot of people who believe in this stuff are fanatical, kind of like some religious people are. No, I wouldn't go that far. I know there's people who try to make UFO religions and try to kind of make money off it, and obviously that's, you know, not something that I don't think any of us support.
Heaven's Gate, I don't know if that's a religion. Certainly it was a cult. The Raelians, I don't know if you've studied them yet.
No, I've not.
Oh, there's your next book.
Yeah.
You quote, in your book, you quote Jeff Kripal, who's just a terrific thinker in this topic. What did you take away from that?
Oh, it was absolutely fascinating. Just his approach. You know, he's a professor of religious studies, and he's claimed to have some experiences as well. And yeah, it just fascinated me to talk to somebody who has this huge background in religion, and but there's also a scientific method to kind of what he believes too. And I think his approach it was really fresh to me, because he wrote a book called Mutants and Myths and Mystics, which was very influential when I was writing my book. I basically, the last person I interviewed for the book was him, and the book was about 90% done. And he was a key person to talk to, because a lot of the things I was talking about in the book already was stuff that that he's previously covered. And I was really great to get his input. And his book, Mutants and Mystics, is really cool, because it kind of goes back into pop culture and mythology, and how so many of these people who shaped our pop culture and our superhero culture and fiction, how they've been influenced by paranormal. And one of the things he said to me, or something he said once before, was paranormal stories, they're more common than people think. And you know, he says the Bible is full of what we would call paranormal stories, and they are. When you think about it, you know, if any of those stories were true, and if they happened today, they'd be considered paranormal.
Yeah, I've interviewed him on this program. In fact, he's interviewed me too, and just a great thinker. He casts a wide net, as you mentioned. He brings in not only mythology and religion, but Marvel comics and things of that sort, and ties them all together. In a sense, and I think he would agree, science is could be considered a religion, the way it treats some of these topics. I mean, it is a belief system, a belief structure, and anything outside of the boundaries that their colleagues enforce can't be real, right?
Yeah. One of the things he said to me, I quoted him in the book, was it all depends on your worldview. In one person's worldview, this may be real, and another person's worldview, this cannot exist, no matter, you know. And that kind of goes back to what I talked about earlier, the people's process of belief, about how we rebel against some beliefs and how we accept others.
Well, it gets into the idea of what kind of progress we make on figuring this stuff out. You know, as I said, I've been at it a long time. I think I've learned a lot, but I probably know less than when I started. It's always tantalizingly just outside your grasp is figuring out what's going on. It's kind of like a moving goalpost. I mean, we've got a lot more information about cases. I don't know how many more books could be written about Roswell, but I don't think anybody could agree on what it was or why it's here. I need the big questions: who they are, where they're from, why they're here, what's their interest in us. Anybody who says they can answer any of those is probably to be viewed with some suspicion.
Yeah, because we don't have the answers. And, you know, part of me thinks I don't think we'll ever have them until we die. you know, one of the things I pose in the book is, you know, this whole idea of disclosure. And everyone in ufology, that's the main goal. And I bring up the point that disclosure doesn't mean anything if people don't care. You know, because, you know, we've been studying this stuff for years, and, you know, there's stories running in the New York Times, and there's been, it's crept into the mainstream here and there, but people don't care enough to begin with. I think we have so many things that distract us from caring. We have, you know, real life, our families, we have our other interests, we have work, you know, we have real things to worry about as well. And then on top of that, you know, you have our political landscape in this country and throughout the world. You have all these other things that are just huge priorities, not just in terms of the news, but just in terms of people, which kind of puts us on the back burner, unfortunately. So, you know, if a UFO landed on the White House tomorrow, I think it would be a big deal. But, you know, like I said, the idea of disclosure doesn't mean much unless people care about it. And I think people have to care about this topic in general for us to move forward.
Well, I would agree with you. And it's hard, not only because of the other priorities in people's lives that you mentioned, but just to get your head around it. The learning curve for this is really hard. Is steep. It takes a while to separate wheat from chaff, to figure out what's credible and what isn't, because there's so much stuff. You know, disclosure has essentially happened. You have the Pentagon has confirmed it takes it seriously. It studies it in secret, that it's had these encounters. We've seen the videos. We know the same is true for Russia, for China, for other governments. We know that there are vast storage piles of information and data, radar returns and films and videos, and, you know, it's all there if somebody wants to take the time to go ahead and pull it all together, but it takes work.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that in itself should be proof enough for some people to take this seriously and to acknowledge it. You know, the fact that you said, you know, we have officials in all world governments that came out and spoke out about, you know, the studies and the existence of this. So I think that in itself, it kind of shows that, you know, the mainstream doesn't care, because those all should have been huge. They all should have been front page news, and it wasn't.
Well, it's also encouraging in a way if you are one of the folks who worry that something approaching official disclosure would send people into a panic. Maybe there's some truth to that, but I suspect that actually not many people would pay that much attention for very long. It depends on what's disclosed, you know?
Yeah, I don't buy that anymore, that, you know, if the truth came out, we'd destroy our systems and everything would fall. And look, people know the government lies to us. They lie to us all the time. That's not news. You know, there's certain things that are kept secret for a reason. So if that came out, I don't think it would be this, you know, this huge shock to our systems, as some people say. I think that's just kind of a cop-out.
We'll take a couple of calls east of the Rockies, Frederick in Connecticut. Hi, Fred. You're on with Mike DeMonte.
Hey, George. Hey, Mike. How's it going? Hey,
hi,
you know, I really just want to thank you guys for the, you know, working on disclosure and whatnot. But, you know, you mentioned it earlier, like, if, you know, a UFO landed on the White House lawn tomorrow, you know, in a week, people wouldn't care. And that's the frustrating part of it for me, is just getting people, you know, to stay interested in it. Because, I mean, you know, what was it? Like you said, that the videos a year ago, you had Navy pilots out in the middle of the Pacific. They went out there to track those two echoes or whatnot. And those guys were like, we don't know what it is. We want to fly one for sure. But it's like, there you have the most trusted people in our, you know, defense of our country. And they don't know what it is. And they're on talk shows saying, hey, we saw this. We have radar video of it. And no one cares a week later, you know?
Yes, Frederick, you're a pilot, right?
Yes, sir. Driving to work.
I don't suppose you want to say who you fly for.
Absolutely not.
Have you seen one? Have you had an encounter yourself?
I never have, but I mean, you know, there's careers have been ruined by pilots that, you know, that said they had. I mean, you take that one, I think it was the Japanese cargo pilot back in like the 70s or 80s, and they basically saw the giant walnut-shaped, you know, crack. I can't remember the actual flight, but that captain that reported it, similar to like how the Spielberg film, you know, Close Encounters, when they had it, do you want to report it? And they're like, no. He regretted to that day, because he was pulled from flying and basically put on a desk job for the rest of his career. And, you know, I mean, he said, yeah, I was still paid, but I wasn't allowed to fly for the end of my career. And I mean, unfortunately, you know, it would be nice if everyone was on the same page and said, yeah, there are things out there, i.e. disclosure, that we don't know what they are, but we do know they exist, you know, and then you'd probably have a lot more reporting of it, you know?
So you've already sort of thought this out, that if you see one, unless you absolutely have to, you're not reporting it to anybody.
I mean, yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, I mean, they have reporting for it. You're not going to see, I don't think you're going to see anything going from, you know, New York to Florida, you know, the middle of the day. I don't think that's going to happen or something like that. But, I mean, certainly the long-haul pilots, I mean, you take the pilots during World War II, the Foo Fighters and whatnot. I mean, those people saw something, you know. They were, you know, like, oh, they were tired, they were this. They were, you know, they were seeing something that they didn't know what it was. And, you know, how many times in history going back do we hear these reports of either paintings or, you know, primitive cultures seeing things that they couldn't explain? I mean, just because we're advanced flying airplanes or advanced, you know, going into space, low Earth orbit, doesn't mean that, you know, we're still going to see things that we can't explain. And I mean, to just discount it and be like, oh, they're crazy or oh, this or that, I mean, it does a discredit to the professionalism that they do, you know?
One last question. So is there an informal grapevine where pilots talk about these things?
I mean, every once in a while you'll get with a pilot who, you know, said they've seen this or they've seen something out of the norm. But, I mean, there's an official reporting for it. I mean, it's not every company, every, you know, every airline, every – even the FAA has an official reporting, you know, form for it. You can go online and Google it and look it up. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can fill it out. They recommend you do because, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think they truly know what they are either, you know? So, I mean, proof of that is those two Navy pilots within the last year, you know, that saw that and were just absolutely enamored and intrigued by it. I mean, the one guy, I think he was on a, whatever the commander was, it was flying the lead flight.
Dave Fravor.
He was on national, you know, talk shows saying, I don't know what this was. We didn't know what it was. We were sent out there to investigate, and all I know is I want to fly one. I mean, that's huge, you know. And again, you know, 2 weeks later, a month later, 6 months later, you know, back to your iPhones, back to your iPods. No one cares, you know.
Frederick, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Mike, thank you.
I was going to add something to that.
Sure.
I have a friend who works for a major airline, and he reported a sighting to me, and he didn't want his name. Because of the potential backlash from the company.
Yeah, I would think it would be even worse for military pilots. Dave Fravor is a brave guy for coming forward to talk about it, but I don't know if he'd do it if he's still on active duty. It does no one any good, you know. No, it does no career any good, including a lot of journalists, I would say. Let's go to Joe in Monterey on the wild card line. Hey, Joe.
Hi, gentlemen. I had a lot of experiences. I've been meditating for 46 years. I've been a healer for 42. I come across a lot of different clients and different things, but I also have developed myself where I can make contact with the other side to a degree. You're dealing with interdimensional beings, and most of the people that study UFO phenomena, like the MUFON group and UFO community, they don't develop themselves enough to have some certain types of experiences. Now, some of them do, but their source of information is usually what's been recorded and validated through a physical means. But the real validation is from the ETs themselves, positive ETs. And if you can contact them, they can tell you a great deal. But there is a lot of deception amongst the negative ones, and I'm sure there's plenty of things written about that. What have you done to employ a reputable contactee, or at least what they call now an experiencer? An experiencer is a person who experiences a lot of paranormal activity or experiences. Okay.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for the call. Mike, I don't remember in your book, if this one or the last one, whether you get into experiences other than Betty Andreessen. Well, you do write about Whitley Strieber, too.
Yeah, correct. I interviewed a few for the book that aren't as mainstreamed as them. There's people who are involved in the field that have had experiences, some of them where it's not ongoing. But it's interesting what the caller said about the idea about meditation, and a lot of things I've read is, you know, this is a totally different, it's a totally different playing field in terms of, we're talking about the idea of interdimensions and, you know, ETs, and it's not, you know, it's not this physical communication of which we think. And this, a lot of things I hear, everything's, you know, our subconscious, or we're in a different state of being the whole time. And that's why I believe that in our current state of being, you know, I don't think we can make the contact that people think, you know, we can. If you hear about abduction cases and experiences, it's always in a dreamlike state, or the beliefs and the memories are hidden in your consciousness. And I think there's something there. I think that's definitely something that needs to be scientifically looked at to see if that can be measured. And from some of the things I've heard and some of the things I've read lately, that's kind of been out there, people are trying to measure that. There is a way to potentially measure this channeling or this communication that people claim to have.
Well, you know, even if you can't measure it or validate it, you make the point in the book, I forget which interviewee said this to you, but emphasizing the importance of listening to witnesses, even if it requires, you know, a willing suspension of disbelief. You stay open-minded, you have to listen to what they say and judge it later, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, you know, not only giving everyone a voice, but, you know, it's in our traditional journalism upbringing, you know, I think some of these people you would probably not kind of approach as credible sources because their stories seem so outlandish, but you have to be open-minded because, you know, this is not traditionally, it's not traditional science. It goes in the face of everything that we've previously known.
Yeah, it's sort of an existential challenge to science in many ways. I don't know if you're familiar with the Utah Ranch, the Skinwalker place, but there are teams of scientists on there who, you know, they tried every kind of scientific method to measure and interact and validate, and whatever it was elusive, had trickster phenomena, and sort of was sending a message that this is outside the normal boundaries of science, that maybe you're going to have to look at it in a different way, a different framework.
Yeah, and can I say your work on that book is probably top 10 in terms of all time with this topic. So that's just my opinion.
Well, I appreciate that. But I mean, you know, I don't know. There aren't that many scientists who are willing to admit that maybe science isn't the prism through which you can look at something. They think science can figure out everything, and maybe it can, but the boundaries are strictly enforced.
Yeah, it's science as we know it. I think that's the question, is that we look at it as science we know it, as opposed to these scientific ideas and ideals that mainstream science kind of scoffs at.
Well, you know, you've heard it 100 times, I'm sure. It's too far. If they're extraterrestrials, it's too far. We can't get there, therefore they can't get here. That's the assumption.
Sure.
We're talking with Mike DeMonte. Punk Rock and UFOs, True Believers is his book. A lot of folks on the phone lines. We're going to come right back and get to as many calls as we can. We're talking with Mike DeMonte about his book, Punk Rock and UFOs, True Believers, in a moment, our final segment, and we will get to as many of your calls as we can here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about True Believers with Mike DeMonte, and we go back to the phones. David in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, David, good morning.
Hey, George, I'm disappointed in you. I thought until tonight that, unlike George Norrie, who's an entertainer, that you are a journalist and a reporter. But your attacks on science, which you did a few minutes ago and then you did just now, just a couple minutes ago, were very disappointing to me, and I think discredits your objectivity. You said that scientists will not accept anything that's outside the boundaries. Well, I don't think that's true. I think the problem is not that. The problem is that nobody has presented, including your guest tonight, at least from what I've heard, what he said on the air, has presented any credible evidence of ET visitation. And I think if that were to be presented, science would look at it objectively and treat it seriously.
I think you're wrong to some degree. And first of all, I'm not sure that anyone here has said that there's evidence of ETs. It's just evidence of something that we don't understand. I'm not an advocate of the ET hypothesis. I don't think Mike is either. And his book is not a book about evidence. His book is about the true believers and how belief systems work within this group. So I've been at this for a long time. I have interviewed dozens of scientists outside of the area of ufology, and I found them to all of them to say pretty much what you say. I will look at the evidence if it's printed in, I'll read the reports in journals and things of that sort. Nothing gets printed in scientific journals about these topics, whether there's evidence or not. You can ask physicist Dr. Hal Puthoff about that, how difficult it becomes. Mike, maybe you'd like to jump into this.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's anything we said was necessarily a knock on scientists per se, but no, you're right. Once they have the, you know, these reports, that then they go with their investigation. And I think as journalists, we could be objective but still have our opinions on stuff as well. So I don't think this is a case of, Mr. Knapp or myself not being objective or showing objectivity. But no, like you said, Hal Puthoff is a great example. You know, you need funding, you need backers to research this stuff. So if you have a little bit of evidence or reports, you can't just go from there. You need all these other tools to go from there. And a lot of times, just the thinking sometimes in the scientific community is what holds it back, not necessarily the methods of science itself.
I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson react to the New York Times UFO story. David, if you're still there, he had come on the air and was interviewed on one of the news programs, and he reminded the audience, well, you know, the U in UFO stands for unidentified, which, and that's, yeah, exactly, which is like saying the U in the USA stands for United. Of course, people know that U stands for unidentified. The assumption by some is that UFO means alien, which that is not an assumption that I would make.
Well, that's why I didn't say UFOs. I said ET visitation, because clearly UFOs exist. There's no question about that. There are things in the sky, you know, there are lights in the sky that we don't know what they are. But the ET believer community, you know, jumps from, including George Norrie, and I can quote him directly on this, jumps from that to say, well, it has to be spaceships. It has to be ET visitation. It can't have any other explanation. And I'm glad you're not in that category. And if Mike is not in that category, I'm glad of that too. That's another thing. The book is about punk rock, and I've heard very little about punk rock. I heard some mention of Blink 182 and Tom DeLonge. But another thing is this New York Times story that you keep going back to. You've done it a number of times, as if this means the New York Times has endorsed some sort of
again, now you're putting words into my mouth. I didn't say the New York Times endorsed anything about ETs or UFOs. What I said was it changed the media environment about reporting these stories.
You know, everybody knows about Project Blue Book. Everybody knows about the Condon Report. I mean, this is just an updated version of that, as best I can tell. I mean, we don't know what, if anything, they discovered, and yet this keeps being put forward. Maybe not just by you, but...
Well, did you watch the videos? What did you think those videos showed?
I haven't watched any videos recently, but I have been looking for credible photographs or videos about this topic for at least 50 years. And
I would recommend that you'd look at the videos, the three videos that were released from the Pentagon of military encounters with unidentified objects. Unidentified, not ET. They don't know where they came from, but they did say that these craft had entered our airspace, had engaged with U.S. warplanes, our most advanced planes, and that they flew circles around them, and they don't know what the technology was. It was from somewhere else.
If there are some credible videos that are more than just blips of light in the sky, you know, that is very important, because what we have overwhelmingly is, or what we have exclusively that's credible at all, or eyewitness accounts, witness testimony.
Well, again, David, I would suggest that maybe you reread that New York Times story and maybe watch the videos that came along with it. We appreciate your input. Thanks very much for calling. Going to Danny in Cocoa Beach, Florida. Danny, what's on your mind?
Oh, I just got a quick statement, man. I was listening to y'all talk about how if UFOs landed on the White House lawn tomorrow, not too many people would bother with it. But the only thing that would make me upset is all the capabilities that these people in the UFOs, ETs, whatever you want to call them, which I do believe in, because, you know, to think we're alone is kind of ignorant. But, I mean, the capability of healing, the energy that they have, I would think it would collapse our entire society when it comes to the oil barons, you know, the people with the oil and the fuel industry and this and that would all collapse, because it's, now there's free energy. And if our government's known about this for 50, 60, 70 years, I kind of feel like I'm a little bit being stabbed in the back. You know, that's about it.
Well, no, I was going to add to that. You know, you said if we were able to kind of take those technologies, and there's, you know, some people believe that we've had these technologies and they've played a part in some of our technological advances. But if anything, I think as a society, if, you know, if that was the case, we have to progress. And if these corporations, you know, like big oil, you know, if they want to continue to be a corporation, what you do is you progress, you move on. You know, you could argue the idea right now of clean energy. If you're a large oil company, you should be investing in that. You know, there's just another way to make money for me. So, you know, to me, if I was them. So I think, you know, I don't think it would collapse our society. If anything, it could help enrich it.
Danny, thank you for the call. East of the Rockies, Jay in Florida. Good morning, Jay.
Hey, George. How you doing?
All right. What's on your mind?
Oh, just, well, I'm a truck driver / musician. And like y'all brought up the subject earlier about, you know, why people would think that, like, Mike was, just because he's a musician or whatever, he'd be writing books like that. But, you know, people that are in tune with what's around them is basically subject to know that this stuff is going on out here. You know, like, I drive a truck for a living over the interstates and stuff, and I've seen things that you just can't explain. You know, you go home and you tell the wife, well, I saw this thing go across the desert, and she's going like, you're nuts. And I'm going like, no, I actually saw this. She says, well, where's her picture? I said, well, you really can't get a picture of it. You know, in real time, I mean, like that military footage and stuff. Like that earlier guy that was just like ranting about crazy stuff. You know, it's not that hard to understand that this stuff is actually going on. I mean, I've seen some pretty phenomenal flying machines out here, you know.
I guess it's hard to take a photo when you're driving a big rig truck, though, too.
Yeah, I know. You know, I do take photos of the phone, you know, cool thunderstorms and stuff like that. And I've actually got a couple of pictures of something. I was taking a picture of sunset in Oklahoma, and when I looked at the picture, I've got a shiny object that was not there. And if it was like an airplane or something that was between me and the sunset, why was it shiny on the this side? And I showed it to her, and she's going like, well, how do you know that's what or something else? I'm going, it was not there, but there it is in the picture, you know. So I don't know, you know, it's just great that the, you know, he's wrote a book about this stuff, and it's just like I it was kind of crazy because I was asleep, and I always sleep listening to Coast to Coast. And when y'all were talking about him, I don't know, a couple of months ago, George Norrie was talking about him. And it's like, I'm going, wow, you know, I've been listening to some of the music and stuff like that, picking up on it. And then I wake up and he's on the radio. So, hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hi. Thank you.
So, you know, it was just like crazy. And I woke up and there he was. I'm going, well, this is cool. So I've been up all night listening to y'all. So I just wanted to say, love your show. And I will purchase his book. And, that's about all I got to say about that.
Well, thanks for sharing, Jay. Thanks. Appreciate that. And Mike, it does boil down to the witness reports, I guess. I'm not sure that would qualify as evidence for some folks, including the guy who just called in, David, who made some good points.
I agree. I think that's where you start, though. You start with the witness reports and you go from there. And I think, part of the two, even, you know, before the age of the internet, before we had all this mass communication, that people were having the same exact same experiences with no connections to each other all over the world. So
we'll go to what? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. It wasn't some huge collaborated hoax. You know, these are people having these very unique, but similar at the same time experiences all throughout history.
Well, the case that you mentioned earlier, the Japan Airlines case, the pilots see this, or that we discussed earlier in the program, the Japan Airlines case. I'm not sure how our earlier caller would view that one, but, you know, you have the pilots, experienced pilots who see this thing. It's gigantic. It's picked up on multiple radars, and it's real. It's not any craft that's known on Earth. I don't know how you explain it. It's an unknown for sure. It's unidentified, but it's weird. We'll go west of the Rockies. Tyler in Alaska. Hey, Tyler.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? You're on Coast to Coast.
Hi, thank you. No, I'm not doing too bad. How's you guys not going?
All right, what's on your mind?
I got a quick question for you and your guest. Sitting here thinking while listening to the show, what could people do to make this more aware in the world and the United States, and trying to maybe apply more pressure to the government to try and get them to be a little bit more truthful about maybe some of the things that they might have seen, in quotation marks?
I think the first thing you do is conversations. Talk more about it with people, elected officials. The stories you read, if you read them online, if in, you know, large newspaper, click on them, comment on them. They love that engagement, and I think that's a start.
You have a Mike. You have an entire section, a call to action, chapter in the book where you sort of you take off your journalist hat.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think. You know, you kind of have to separate those two things, your belief system and your kind of the way you were brought up to kind of report on these types of things as well. But no, I think, you know, there's the persuasive element in that chapter, and it's definitely just calling people to get interested. I'm not necessarily saying believe everything we believe, but at least want to have that that mindset and the mentality to be interested in the first place. And I think that's the first step that people should take.
We're going to go to the international line, Ben in Qatar. Wow, I don't think I've ever had a call from there before. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
How's it going? I just have a really quick question. I'm actually at work at the moment. What did Greg Griffin actually say? Because you mentioned him earlier on the program, but you never got into what him or Milo ever actually talked about in the conversation. I'll take my question off air.
All right.
Yeah, so Greg Rathman is the frontman for a band called Bad Religion, and he's also a PhD professor. He's written books on evolutionary biology. So when I got his take, you know, at first he was kind of the typical scientific approach to it, you know, until there's proof, no. But then, you know, towards the end of the conversation, it's kind of like, well, there could be. So he's very open-minded, even though he has such a large background in biology and in the scientific realm of it as well. But he's open-minded to the idea.
A lot of times when you hear a scientist say, well, where's the proof? If there was evidence, I'd study it. They mean an alien body and an alien and or an alien craft, instead of things like the 3,000 or so trace cases where witnesses say a UFO landed and there's burned soil and impressions on the ground and cracked tree limbs and things of that sort, or, you know, the marks that it makes on humans and animals or things of that sort, or radar returns as evidence. You know, it, I guess proof is in the eye of the beholder often. You know. We'll try to get to the first time caller line, Eric in South Dakota. Hey, Eric.
To be on the show, you know, I've been listening to you guys for a while now and really felt passionate about this particular topic here.
Well, thank you. Did you have something more specific for Mike? We got about 2 minutes left.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? I'm a firm believer that there is alien life out there. A family member of mine has Majestic 12 clearance, and I know with all your guys' insight on that, you'll know what that clearance gets you. And I have seen the actual documentation of what happened at Roswell, New Mexico.
Well, share it with us. Send it to me. Make a copy.
We would all love to
certainly do that for you. Well, there is confirmed that three bodies were recovered from a crash.
Well, Eric, I appreciate you sharing it with us. I don't know what we do with the information unless we can see what you've got. So why don't you ask that family member if they're willing to share it with the world, because I'd be willing to take a look. Thank you for the call. Mike, is this your last Punk Rock UFOs book, or you got something else in mind?
I would love to continue writing about this topic and further my research. You know, I think we talked about earlier how we never stop learning, and sometimes – you know, the more you research, the more you learn, you realize how much we actually really know about this phenomenon. I definitely want to continue writing about it. I do on my website, punkrockingufos.com, and eventually one day turn into another book, I hope, as well as some other books in the works, some other fictional books as well that are not related to the topic. But I would definitely like to do Punk Rocking UFOs 3, make it a proper trilogy. So, yes, one day.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. It was fun to talk to you, and I hope you'll keep us in the loop here.
Oh, no, it's an absolute honor to be on the show with you, George. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
All righty. Punk Rock and UFOs, True Believers by Mike DeMonte. And I'd like to thank our earlier guest, Ron Moorhead, talking about his book, The Quantum Bigfoot. And thanks to my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio and Donna Walker, our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, producer Chris Boros and Dan Galante. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back next Sunday. Good night, everyone.